All right, so because you're here, if you are a good note taker today, you will have all of the notes. Because the front and back, right? Weeks 1 and 2 are filled in. Weeks 1, 2, and 3 are already filled in for you on this note sheet. And then week 4 is ready for you to fill in. All right, so we left off and I kind of hurried through the strategy for financial recovery. Which, not proud of, but we can integrate in some of that into today. So if you remember, we ended with how do I recover financially? So first was establish an emergency fund, and I suggested a minimum of $1,000 in there to get. So it's like if something comes up, I have funds that can pay something. And remember how I defined emergency was something like completely unexpected. Right? Needing new tires, I don't define as an emergency. Some people do, but you knew 50,000 miles ago that those tires were going to go bad, so be intentional with your funds as time goes. Second was know your debts and know the amounts, and I think I even put a third one in there of know my interest rates for those, considering that the average credit card debt right now is somewhere in the mid to upper 20s as far as percent. And I can, if you know some investment way to get 20-30% of an investment, you might be in a Ponzi scheme, but otherwise, let me know. I might be interested. Okay, so, and then letter C there, pay off your debts, right? So the goal would be, these are not hanging over your head. We are a slave to the lender, Proverbs talks about. And we looked at those last week as we kind of wrapped up very quickly. That brings us to today. And today is, while I've spent a lot of time, weeks 1 and 2, on the theology of stewardship, week 3 was just, remember, big idea, spend less than you make and do it for a long period of time. Today I want to get into a little bit of nuts and bolts, and some of this you're going to be like, okay. But if you're not out of debt, there's an aspect of this that's going to be really difficult to handle. Okay, because like budgeting and giving are going to be fine, but when we get to the investing conversation, like how do I do that? Like one of the biggest investments you can make right now is actually to get out of debt. Okay, and we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get there. Okay, so budgeting. When I think about budgeting, there's a variety of ways you can do this. Some people use apps on their phones. They use programs on their computers. They use spreadsheets. They use the old ledger pads from the old accounting days, if you're of that era. Whatever it is, all of those tools are good and frankly great because they do actually one primary thing. That's letter A. They help you know where every dollar is going. Okay? So, frankly, whatever method or tool you want to use, I don't know that I have a real reason to say no to any of them. But I think the big idea of if I'm trying to steward, right, go back to the parable of the talents. As we walk through that, remember they're given something to steward for a period of time. And I think an implication out of all that is they knew right where all that was the entire time. Right? So how do I go about knowing where every dollar is going? Last week I made the statement of every dollar ought to have a job. So how do I know what job that is? How do I even know what the best job for that dollar is? Right? I might have $5 and there's five different categories those $5 can go in, but there's a best one for it to go at right now. You understand what I mean by that? Like the best spot for that dollar to go right now might be paying down debt, but in 6 months it might be investing. Or it might be something else, right? And that's where letter B comes back to regularly check your financial pulse. Because as these things go, they change, right? Hopefully, if we're being diligent with our resources, we're not living in perpetual debt. If I'm living in perpetual debt, then I'm actually not abiding by the big idea from last week of spend less than I make and do it for a long time. I'm not even, forget the long time part, I'm just not even doing the short time. Right? right? I'm constantly living in a deficit, which puts me in further and further debt. So here's, when you think about budgeting, I have done different things over the years, and some people, it is more helpful to say, here's an exact dollar amount of what we're going to spend on gas and groceries and utilities and when they track it and they're over, they freak out. When they are short, like under budget, they rejoice, and but that's the way it's helpful for them, right? They don't. Other people, it's, all right, I have this bucket, and here's all the things that have to come out of that bucket, and I am disciplined enough to not keep swiping plastic until that bucket is overly drawn, and you can handle it in that sort of way, right? If you go to, like, Dave Ramsey's approach is something like, here's an envelope. That's about the envelope system, right? Here's an envelope for groceries. Here's an envelope for gas. Here's an envelope for whatever categories you want to have. And one of the nice things about that, I mean, it's a hassle in our age, right? In the sense of a lot of people don't utilize cash. I paid cash for something the other day at the store, and the clerk kind of looked at me like I had three heads, like, why didn't you just swipe a card or do Apple Pay or something like that, right? But here's the reality. I laid that dollar bill, or it wasn't a dollar bill, right? That bill on the counter, and I literally watched it, like, go out of my hand and watched what the change was, come back and be like, that's not as much as I just, like, there's the physical, mental side of that that helps you realize how much is going away. All right, so some people have the discipline to do that when they're swiping the card and they're able to do that and they pay it off every month. Some people need the discipline of physically having that stuff go out of their hand and not come back, right? You've got to know what works for you, right? If you're like, I don't know, okay, start on the extreme end to make sure you can handle it versus just like, oh, I got this under control, and just start swiping, and next thing you know, it's like, oh, I have like $30,000 at 27%. Good luck paying that off anytime soon, right? So that's where budgeting has a variety of components to it, and there's not a one-size-fits-all. I mean, even when you go from, like, organizational budgeting to personal budgeting, there's principles that overlap, but the practice isn't always the same, right? So there's a part that I'm leaving out of budgeting right here, but that's on purpose because we're going to come to it in just a second. But any questions, comments on budgeting broadly? And I'm trying to kind of stay out of the weeds a little bit and give big picture, because this is where either you need to sit down and just, you know, you and your spreadsheet or notepad or you know, Mint or Rocket Money or whatever it is, and work through these things. Because there's a lot of personal, like, all right, so here's my income, and here's this, and here's that, and seeing that picture. But big picture, I've got to know where all those dollars are going, because God has entrusted all of those dollars to me. And going back to the parable of talents, I have to give an account for what I did with those dollars. Okay? So, again, we could get into specifics, but I'm trying to keep big picture so it's more everybody versus, like, your scenario. Any big picture comments or questions? Yes, sir. I would say the latter part of that. So like car expenses, you know they're going to come at some point. So while it might be $20 a month you're putting in there, right? You're putting something back, even if that ends up not being the total amount needed, you're not just thrashed in your emergency fund when it comes, because it's brakes are coming, tires are coming, right? In my situation, various people do this differently, right? But there's, when you think about your mortgage, there's an escrow account that's your mortgage payment, your insurance, and your property taxes. And depending on your scenario, they'll let you do your mortgage payment to the bank, your taxes individually, and your insurance individually, right? I'm one of those that I get to do it all differently, separately. So my property taxes come due twice a year. But every month I have something going into an account so that when that bill comes, it's just like, there it is. Not like, oh, there's a few thousand dollars I have to go to the state or the county or whatever, right? So you're preparing for it. Putting it, that would be part of like, in my budgeting process, I'm thinking through, okay, my mortgage payment's this, my insurance payment's this. Those are both monthly, so they're just rolling. But then my taxes are coming out twice a year. So, but I know roughly what that amount's going to be. So I just divide that by 12, and every month I put that amount into an account. So that then when it comes due, I pull from there versus, oh, how do I come up with this money? Does that answer your question? Right. Right. It's that concept. Yep. Yep. It's that concept. So those all play in your budget, right? Because monthly I'm doing something with those dollars, even though. Yeah, there's different ways to do it. You can, if you're disciplined enough, you can put it all in the same account and say, all right, well, I've got $5,000, but, you know, two of that's Christmas and three of that's taxes and 1,000 of it is, I just did the wrong math. Right, but you get the point, right? I got a 6,000 when I said 5,000. Or you could have three different accounts, right? Just some of that's more comfort level. Sometimes it's visually nice to log into your dashboard and see, all right, here's my Christmas fund, here's my tax fund, here's my whatever fund, right? And you just know where they're at versus like, okay, so that's the total. Which one's what part is what? Yeah. Yeah, different people are different ways in that. Sure. So this big picture, right? Getting there has some steps to it. Big picture. I have to get to the point where it's like that savings account effectively doesn't exist. And I just remember, you know, when my true-up comes, oh, yeah, so it already exists, right? It's a discipline thing, right? Your daily stuff? Yeah. There's a guardrail in there that keeps you from just pulling from it. And those that you're setting aside, you know, your, like, I think we talked about this last week, your typical savings account tied to probably the same institution that has your checking account would give you like half of a percent, maybe. Probably more like 0.05 is more realistic, right? Yeah, I mean, it's like nothing, right? Where, but then you log into a dashboard, say Chase, right? And it's like, there's my checking, there's my savings, it's all right there. And it's like, oh, I have those funds. Push it out of there, like what Kay's talking about, to like I have a money market savings account that's held by a different bank. So I have a different dashboard I have to go into that. And I'm sending over to those. So when I log in, all I see is my daily use funds, so to speak, right? But I have to go to a different one, and it takes a couple of days to actually transfer back over. So it's a little bit of that trigger hurdle type of deal, right? And it's earning more interest, so it's not completely dead sitting. Yeah. You only have to. But if it's helpful, you can do that. But here would be my warning of having multiples. Okay? There are some accounts that if you have, for every account you have, there's a minimum balance in them. And if you drop below that, there's a fee. So you want to make sure that whatever you're doing, you're not ever dropping below that balance so that you don't get the fee. Otherwise, you're kind of hurting yourself in the midst of hurting, helping yourself. Okay? All right. I'm going to move on. That was helpful for me. All right, so giving. Okay, one of the things nobody wants a pastor to talk about right here. Okay, giving. Is 10% the number? Is 10% the right number? We hear, oh, our tithes and offerings, right? And everybody goes to the Old Testament, starts talking about tithes, and it's 10%, 10%. Actually, it's not. If you want to go to the Old Testament and talk about tithes and say it's 10%, it's not 10%. It's actually something like 23%. Okay? But we live in the New Testament age, and there's actually not a dictated percentage. However, we have principles that talk about God loving a cheerful giver, being generous, right? And these concepts come out throughout the New Testament to where, like, okay, so I could get away with 3% and be doing it. Oh, maybe that's right for you. But I would challenge you to say, all right, if you're set on 3%, then why are you living on bare bone minimum type of idea? Right? Like you have no subscription services, you're not going out to eat all the time, you're not stopping for a coffee every morning, right? Like you're stewarding your resources in a fairly weak way. Because you're saying all of these other components are more important than actually giving to the Lord the things that the Lord's entrusted to me. Right? There's an implicit obligation, even responsibility, is probably a better way to say it. When we become a member of a church, we're actually saying that we're responsible for the financial well-being of that church. Guess how the church makes money? If I can say it that way. Giving, right? And it's like, well, I'm just giving it and you guys do whatever you want with it. No, actually we don't. There's this thing called a member meeting, right? We're congregational. You guys as members come and vote on a budget that we present to you, and you could say no, right? And you can walk through all those things, and really you as the congregation are saying, here's the funds, and you're also approving the way in which those funds are used. Okay? So, is 10% the right number? Not necessarily, but I would challenge you to say if you're 10% is a great starting point. Right? It's easy math as far as here's my income, 10%, there it is. At the same time, you know, if I had a seminary prof say something, I'm going to butcher the quote, but it's something like this. I was trying to figure out how to say this all week, and I can't figure out how he said it exactly. So you'll get the idea. If I can't give 10%, but I can have all these extras in my life, then I should cut the extras because 10% should go to the Lord. And he went on to say, I've done that for a number of years. And over those years, he's like, I've actually never given less than 10%. I've often given way more. There's another component of that. Letter B, you guys can probably fill in that blank if you just sat and thought about it for a second, right? All of these resources are God's resources, right? So when I'm talking about giving 10%, it's like I'm giving back to the one who already owns them, so it's his, right? It's his that he's entrusted to us, and we're simply taking something like Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9, honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. Okay? The idea of maybe first crop, but the idea there is when we bring that into the financial world, oftentimes when we work through a budget, it's like, okay, income, mortgage, electric, gas, water, like auto gas. This one up here was like house gas. Groceries, right, and clothing, whatever, right? And we put budget or giving like way down here. I think Proverbs would actually suggest that it goes income, giving, mortgage, etc., right? Because as soon as we get the funds, it's like, all right, Lord, these are yours. There it is. I actually personally have noticed this in my own life. And I've seen it happen in other people's lives too. When you're struggling with how do I actually make even 10% work in my budget, when I shifted my order of where giving comes in my mindset, all of a sudden doing 10% became really easy. I remember a number of years ago, I was talking to a guy, I think I was still in college at the time, and he was just like, man, I have no money to be able to give. And we wrestled through it with one of our pastors at the time, and they challenged us both in, all right, move it to the front. Like, you get the paycheck on Friday, like, that's the first thing you're doing with it. Like, you gave that, like, 6 months, and all both of us sat down with him again. We're like, you know, 10% became pretty easy. Because now I didn't have it to spend on more frivolous things. Things that maybe weren't wrong, but things that I didn't have to have. They weren't those needs, right? It was going back to the realities of finance last week with my lifestyle determines my needs. Well, my lifestyle was determining that I couldn't give. And when I reorient that, or reorder all of that, suddenly it's like, oh, I can give fairly easily, right? And it forced me to cut some other things out of my life, but that wasn't a bad thing. Right? It forced me to think through what God had entrusted to me. So, when you think through this, when I'm thinking through how to order budgeting and put giving in there, if I'm putting giving way down in the scope of things, I'm essentially denying. I'm willfully choosing to deny that the tools that God has given to me are sufficient for what I need. Even though I'm giving up, say, 10, 15% of that. So we have to think through that. So, I mean, even Dave Ramsey and his stuff, which they're loosely grounded in Scripture, and I'll emphasize loosely. But he gets to a point in his 7 baby steps where you're giving, I mean, I think it's actually number 7, right? You're giving like no other. My tension with how he presents it is it seems like, I don't know that he would say this, but it seems like you're not giving at all earlier in steps. And I think even in the midst of getting rid of debts, we're still called to be giving. So, But even something like Ramsey, I think he's pushing us towards, all right, how do I steward this? How do I give back? All right. Short rabbit. doesn't sit well with me either. And so I just said the opposite. I've heard people say that, though. So here would be the basic argument I would say against that. Okay. Oftentimes, like, there's good debts and there's bad debts, if I can say it that way. Right? All of them are slave to the lender, but there's good debt. Right? Like, you need a house, but a house appropriately sized is a good debt. But in the midst of my careful how you hear this. I'm going to be careful how I say it, but I want you to be careful how you hear it too, okay? In the midst of my decisions of how to utilize the funds that God has entrusted to me, why does that give me a license to keep from God what is already His? Okay? You were listening so carefully, okay? In the midst of the financial decisions that I'm making, right? I have, see if I can say it the same way. I have made decisions that should not keep me from returning to the Lord the things that He's entrusted to me because of foolish decisions that I've made. I said that way better the first time than I did the second time. Go back to the recording and listen to how it said. Right. Now, I have a responsibility to pay those things off. I have a responsibility to, you know, if I'm a member of a church, I have a responsibility to support the financial well-being of that organization, right? I have a responsibility to care for one another. Now, it could be one of those that me caring for another, for someone, might mean writing a check for $5,000. For you, it might be saying, hey, I'll bring you a meal, right? And those are very different sides, but they're both caring and being intentional with it and utilizing the resources that God has entrusted to me for the sake of honoring and glorifying Him. Right, there's obligations that I have. And I would put giving in an obligation. Like that terminology doesn't set well in our modern culture, as far as like I'm obligated to do this, but it is before the Lord, I am responsible to, like it actually builds my faith, right? If I'm taking 90% of my, just take 10% off top, right? My paycheck comes in and now I'm going to live off 90% instead of 100%. Remember we talked about spending less than we make and do it for a long time, and it's like, okay, well, my ceiling actually just dropped because my top end dropped. So it forces me to think through some of that. Excellent way to say it. Don't manufacture a loophole. Okay. No, I don't, that's my point, is I don't see where anybody's like, oh, pay off this debt before you serve the Lord. Right? It's but that's different than actually saying, I'm not going to give they're trying to use that same argument, I think, and it's flipping it on its head in a way I don't think you can. Yeah. All right. Shocker, I'm running out of time. Okay. Number three, investing. Investing. Invest early and often. Invest early and often. So here's my reasoning for that. Okay. We could sit here and draw out charts, and I thought about putting them in your notes. I'm like, this is not, it's not the point. Okay. But go to, you can go online and find all sorts of savings calculators, investment calculators, and you put in a dollar amount, and you do that. You know, the classic one is you do $1,000 a year from age 20 to age 30, and then you don't. And then someone starts investing from like age 40 to 65. And because of the beauty of compound interest, you actually have more when you start early and then stop versus waiting until later. Okay? So letter B is consider the rule of 72. Okay? Does anybody know what the rule of 72 is? Do you know, Becky? Okay, rule of 72. It is, how long, did you look it up? I'm like, you didn't know it a bit ago. Okay? How long does it take to double your investment? You take your amount, sorry, take the interest rate in which you're gaining on that investment. So divide it by 72, and that's the number of years it takes to double it. Okay, so think about your standard savings account that you get at your normal bank at 0.02%. It's basically never going to double itself. Right? Where if you take the standard rate of return over the markets over the past, I don't know, 50 years, and depending on inflation and everything, it's often everybody just says like 7 to 8%, right? But sometimes you'll hear as high as 10, 12, sometimes you hear as low as 6, but you have to figure, there's inflation calculator. Anyway, you put all that in. So let's just, for sake of argument, let's say the number is 8% over a long-term investment. If that's the case, so how long is it going to take me to double an investment at 8%? 9 years. Okay? So 72 divided by 8 is 9. Okay? Some of you are like, how does that work? Okay? Okay? No, sorry. I might have said it backwards. Yes. Yeah. It's very similar, okay? 72 is easier. Okay, so when you work through this, and if I'm investing early and I'm investing often, right, because of the beauty of compounding interest, my $1,000 put in this year at 8% in 9 years will be $2,000. But I don't stop investing for 9 years, right? I continue to invest, right? And you see how this thing starts growing. Now, that's not growing for myself. That's growing so I'm more enabled to serve the Lord in other capacities later in life, right? Whether that's, some people put it in the sense of, all right, I'm putting this money aside. This is a more traditional way, right? I'm putting this money aside so that when I hit age 65, I can no longer go like clock in for a 9-to-5 job, but I can still have enough finances to live without that 9-to-5 obligation. Or they put it in something so that it can grow in some sort of fund that funds, thank you English for using the same word, funds some project later on. Or some organization. There's a beneficiary to it, right? And it's growing over time. But all of that is growing for the sake of, Lord willing, the Lord to be honored in how those things have grown, right? This is why even thinking through how, like, what we invest in, right? There are, last week we talked about there's no quick fix for financial health. There's also no get-rich-quick scheme, right? And there's schemes, there's even ways in which we could invest our money that would produce a return, that whole process would dishonor the Lord, right? And we don't want to dishonor him even in the way in which we gain funds, just the same way we don't want to dishonor him in the way we spend these funds, right? Like, we don't want to, does that make sense? Okay, so, you know of one? What are you sitting on, Becky? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now, there are ways that you can make much higher than your standard rate of return, right? But those aren't necessarily, I'll call, none of them are technically guaranteed, right? But the higher rate of return often has higher risk. So you have to keep that in mind. Right, if you're like, I just want to be safe and have a nice little nest egg that I know will be there when I turn 70 years old, okay, then you're probably going to be a little more conservative. If you're like, hey, let's see where I can go with this because I've got 30 years to rebound, then maybe you're a little more risky. But all of that, whether I'm risky or conservative, right, I'm trying to think through how do I honor the Lord in this investment? Because whatever I do, whether I eat or drink, whatever I do, what am I supposed to do? Do it all to the glory of God. Okay? So, all right, let me wrap this up with Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3. Starting verse 5 says this: Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. But be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. Honor the Lord of your with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty, and your vats will be bursting with wine. Okay? Remember, those are maxims that are generally true. This isn't saying that you will never lose money, that you will automatically be wealthy, that you will, it's not saying that. It's saying honor the Lord in whatever you're doing, and the Lord will reward that. Okay? So, going back to really where I started with this whole thing 4 weeks ago, whose resources are these? They're God's. What's my responsibility with all these resources? Steward them well for his honor and glory. Okay, so in the midst of all that, there's a lot of different ways we can hash that out, right? The way that I do it personally in my family might be different than yours, and that might be okay. But we have to be making sure that we're thinking well about the resources God's entrusted to us so that we can honor him in everything that he's given us, because it's all his, right? If I lose sight of this being his, then I've actually lost sight of what I'm even doing on this planet, right? Because everything that I do ought to be to his honor and his glory. So if I can't sit here and take, if I can't manage a credit card or debit card well, then cut the thing up so that I can honor the Lord with the resources he's entrusted to me. But if you have the discipline and the skill and the knowledge and a variety of other factors that you can do that, you can pay it off every month. You can reap the benefits of some of the reward points that comes with these things oftentimes. Like, great, that's awesome. But you've got to know what works for you to be able to honor the Lord in everything that's going on. Because that's what you're called to do. Okay? So, again, I'll go back to my original offer. If anybody wants to sit, if nobody wants to sit down, I'm fine with that too. But I want to make sure, if you want to sit down and talk about this, whether it's me or somebody else, like let's figure it out, or find somebody to help you figure it out so that you can steward these things well and honor the Lord with whatever he entrusts you. All right? Let me pray. Lord, thank you for the time we've been able to spend talking about stewarding what you've given to us. Lord, would you help us to be intentional with it and purposeful so that we might seek to really even see your church built as you've promised, or you've said you're going to do that, but you've used human instruments to do that. And part of being a human instrument in that is actually part of how we manage our finances. So Lord, help us to do it well so that you would be honored, that your name would be promoted in whatever realm we find ourselves in this world. Thank you for the time we've been able to spend together over the last 4 weeks. May it be used in your sight to grow us all in Christ likeness. In Jesus' name.